but square cut or pear shape, those rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Oh my goodness, I'm not quite sure if they are a girl's best friend, but hey, love the song. You know, the world of fine jewelry can feel both exciting and, you know, a little bit daunting. And if you're in the market for an amazing watch or maybe some dazzling earrings for your special Valentine, we have two experts with us that can give you some advice. I'm Jill Nadeau. This is the Larry Mueller Show. And with us from the American Gem Society are Catherine Bodo, and CEO, and Wade Abel, Director of Gemology. We'll learn more about the industry and how precious gems and metals come together to make a ring or a necklace or whatever. And we want you to join in the conversation. What questions do you have about selecting fine jewelry? Tell us about your favorite piece of jewelry. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Catherine, Wade, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
So, Catherine.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Catherine, tell us what the American Gem Society is.
Great. We are a 90-year-old trade association, and our members are fine jewelry professionals. So, all through the jewelry supply chain, but especially retailers. And our retailers adhere to the highest standards and education and ethics. And so sort of like a CPA gets an advanced credential for being an accountant, we offer the same in the fine jewelry space. So our members adhere to very, very high standards, and they're also passionate about jewelry.
So when you say fine jewelry, how do we define that?
So we define it as what you see when you walk into an independent jewelry store. So everything from diamonds, gems, gold necklaces, anything that's precious or semi-precious.
Okay. Wayne, you're the director of gemology. What do you do in that role?
So as director of gemology, I am the subject matter expert for anything that the membership needs for gemology. I've written some articles for the membership, but I'm also heavily engaged in the education of the membership. So I work towards making sure that all of the education is up to date and that our credentialing programs are all solid so that our members can actually have that next level of education to provide the consumer protection to their customers. It's very exciting. Yeah. The industry is amazing.
That is. Now, how did you both become involved in the jewelry business here? Catherine, why don't we talk with you first?
Great. So I'm actually from Wisconsin. So my mom is an avid Public Radio Wisconsin listener, so I feel like I'm a celebrity in her eyes today. So
wonderful.
Thanks for giving me that gift for Valentine's Day. I was working in events and went to work for a jewelry association in the manufacturing space about 20 years ago and absolutely loved it. I've always loved jewelry, and so immediately upon joining the industry, just knew it was my home and had to stay in. So I've been really fortunate to work at a couple of different trade associations. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but the largest jewelry insurance company is actually located in Neenah, Wisconsin, 112 years old. And I spent many years there, too.
My goodness, I did not know. What's the name of it?
Jewelers Mutual Insurance Company.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I guess it does tell us what it is by its name, doesn't it? What about you, Wade? How did you get involved in gems?
So growing up, I was raised by educators. My dad was a junior high school teacher. My mom was an elementary school teacher. So many of our trips throughout my life growing up were very educational. And I kind of fell in love with gemology through geology and rock collecting and things like that. And so my dad, being a science teacher, kind of got me into the geologic science side of things. And then I started collecting gemstones and realized that there was actually a whole industry around this that was pretty exciting to me. So I studied gemology and actually became a diamond grader for the American Gem Society Laboratories about 10 and a half years ago and started to project manage some of the new products and services that we offered at the lab, and then worked my way up through the lab to director of gemological services for the lab. When the lab closed in the end of 2022, I moved over to the society to help perpetuate the education. So it's kind of a full circle with my parents being in education and me back in education with the subject matter expert of gemology.
You know, we hear that a lot, where people who are children of educators end up back in the teaching profession somehow eventually. So, yeah, that's great. Yeah. So what are some of the big trends right now in jewelry, Catherine?
Okay, well, first of all, I think there's trends that happen all the time. And, you know, we see it on the red carpet and Instagram. There's jewelry everywhere when a celebrity gets engaged. But what's most important is how the jewelry piece makes you feel. So when you put on a piece of jewelry, you should feel special. It should light you up. It should make that moment, that memory captured in that piece of jewelry. So I always say that's the most important, and then knowing your budget when you're selecting that. But there are all kinds of things happening right now. East-west settings, really popular in engagement rings. Pearls are back and bigger than ever. That's a really fun one. And then, of course, layering and mixing textures and colors is always fun. Wade, do you want to talk about a few more? Because Wade is at one of the largest colored stone trade shows in the world right now, so he's on the front line.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Wade.
Yeah, so a lot of people are looking for something that's unique. They are catering to their own personal style and, you know, trying to find something that's unique, something different that others don't have. There's also a very large trend right now in men's jewelry. So that's up and coming. Men's jewelry, tennis bracelets, brooches, even pearls, pearl strands, things like that for men. So the jewelry gifts for Valentine's, they may not just be for the woman. You think about the men as well. That's also a big trend for that's new in the industry.
Sure. Now, I don't know if you noticed, but Taylor Swift was wearing this pretty interesting garter, I guess, with jewels on it and a dangling T. You think you're going to be seeing a lot of that in the next few months?
You know, I think that is probably a red carpet trend. I'm not sure that we'll see that in consumers every day, but I think, you know, jewelry is meant to be an expression, and since the beginning of human existence, people have looked to adorn themselves with jewels and gold and things that make them feel special. So, hey, I think the trend continues today, and we see all kinds of creative ways of doing that.
And jewelry really does kind of reflect the history that it was made in, doesn't it? I mean, you can kind of look at a antique piece, and you can kind of know when it was designed.
Yeah, definitely. There are definite eras of jewelry that go as far back as, you know, I mean, you can go back to the ancient Egyptians for different jewelry when that first started to be created. But then there's specific eras like Edwardian era, the Victorian era, there's the retro age, there's Art Deco pieces, things like that. And definitely there's styles that track with each of those. And we see a lot of those styles coming back into fashion periodically. Right now, a lot of estates and antique jewelry is sought after because the style. It's unique.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because, I mean, I love vintage jewelry myself, but you never really kind of know what you're buying, do you?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, it's always fun to look for treasures and estate sales and things like that. What we always recommend is having a trusted jeweler that you have as a great partner and also a trusted appraiser. So on AmericanGemSociety.org, we have a find a jeweler, find an appraiser tool, and that's a great way to find a professional because certainly there's a ton that goes into the science of appraising and making sure that your piece is authentic.
So in that vein, how has the jewelry profession or the business itself changed over the last few decades?
I think with any business today, technology has changed a lot of how we buy, how we promote AI, of course, in writing descriptions and help in design. But the jewelry industry fundamentally is built on trust and relationships and multi-generational businesses, and that continues today as well. So it's, I would say we embrace technology, but we also are true to our very historic past and the wonderful gems and things that are curated through time.
Do you each have a favorite gem that you like to... you're favorable to? Wade, what about you?
Well, I love colored gemstones. I mean, of course, I love diamonds. There's so much science behind diamonds that I can really, really like sink my teeth into, and that it's exciting for me. But I do love colored gemstones. I love anything that's vibrantly colored. I feel like there's so much life and expression in the color that you see in gemstones and mixing colors. So I don't know that I have a specific gemstone that's a favorite. I do like things that are more rare, just because of the rarity factor is interesting to me, and some of them are absolutely beautiful. There's some phenomenal gemstones that can either change color or have cat's eyes, things like that. I love phenomenal gemstones. I can't pinpoint a single gemstone that I love the most, but just gems in general. I'm a gem nerd, a self-professed gem nerd. So I love gemstones in general.
Well, that's wonderful. And we're going to come back in just a little bit to talk about diamonds, because that's probably on the top of everybody's mind. And we'll be back with that right after this look at the news.
It's then that those louses go back to their spouses. Diamonds are a girl's a best friend. But square cut or pear shape, those rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
And that's right, we are talking about the jewelry industry today, and diamonds for sure. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is the Larry Mueller Show. With us is Wade Abel. He is the Director of Gemology at the American Gem Society, and we also have Catherine Bodo. She is the CEO of the American Gem Society. What do you want to know about keeping your jewelry in good shape, or what would you like to know about lab-grown diamonds? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Wade, Catherine, before we go on to diamonds, Diana in Middleton has a question. Go ahead, Diana.
Hi, I have several opals and from my parents, and they are more true than the manufactured. What is the current status on opals?
Wade, do you want to take that?
Yeah, so, I mean, opals are absolutely beautiful. Current status, are you talking more value, or are you talking, what exactly are you looking for?
The beauty of the opal, the one with the fire. I find the manufactured are not like that.
Yeah, so there are laboratory-grown opals that are definitely different in appearance than natural opals. Natural opals will have a more uneven appearance. The play of color, which is what we call that sort of fire look to it, will be a little bit more uneven. Laboratory grown opals, manufactured opals, it'll be a lot more even and a lot more symmetrical. And the different colors that you see in the play of color can actually be more rare based on the colors that you see. What you want to look for is some like almost paintbrush strokes in there, or pin fire, which is just little dots of that those changing colors, that iridescence that you see in the play of color. But I think opals are absolutely fantastic.
Thanks for that question, Diana. So let's get to diamonds. Catherine, why are diamonds so popular? Where did that even come from?
You know, I think, first of all, we love talking about diamonds, so thanks for this opportunity. But diamonds are billions of years old, so they're like Earth's perfect time capsule. So when you think about a natural diamond, they're rare, they're extraordinary, and, you know, they capture that billion-year-old Earth's mantle, which is extraordinary to think about and also really exciting. But diamonds became a popular engagement trend, probably because they are so strong and so beautiful that they represent that union in a fantastic way. But diamonds are not just for bridal. Diamond stud earrings, amazing. Diamond tennis bracelets and necklaces are super popular. But also diamonds pair with everything. So they are your perfect accessory to, I mean, I think to almost anything.
Okay, well, I think we know you like diamonds. Wade, can you tell us a little bit about how diamonds are formed?
So diamonds are formed deep within the mantle of the Earth over billions and billions of years. What happens is the carbon atoms that make up the diamonds, which diamond is made of one element, carbon, come together with lots of heat and pressure over billions of years. And actually the crystals then form and come up through the mantle and actually come to the surface through extremely violent volcanic eruptions that happened potentially millions of years ago in what we call kimberlite pipes, which are then mined. And the diamond crystals are extracted through that. So it's an incredible journey that diamonds go through from formation to the jewelry store. Just to think what they have to go through to get to the surface, to the mining process, and then the cutting and design before it gets to the jewelry. It's incredible.
It really is. Where are most diamonds found? I know this, South Africa, is that one of them, the areas?
So a lot of there are quite a few locations around the world. South Africa was one of the first major mining locations for diamonds. We do see Canadian diamonds now. There are quite a few mines in Canada. We're even seeing in Brazil a few diamonds. And Australia actually had one of the largest colored diamond mines that had natural fancy pink color diamonds, purple diamonds and brown diamonds, the Argyle mine, which actually just closed a few years ago because it was mined out. So that just is another reminder that diamonds are not perpetual. There is an opportunity for them to be mined out.
So, Catherine, a lot of people are probably thinking about buying a diamond for a loved one this Valentine's Day. And they probably heard about the four C's. Why don't you go over that with us to tell us what that means and why it's important to know those?
All right. Well, I highly recommend working with a trusted jewelry professional because they're going to be able to show you in person what the four C's mean. While you can look and do research on jewelry and diamonds online, there's nothing better than going into a store and seeing it for yourself, because after all, this is something that you're going to give to a loved one or have on your finger. And so you want to see and feel how it sparkles. And there are a lot of personal preferences that go along with that. But of the four C's, I believe cut is the most important, because that is the craftsmanship of the diamond, and that is what generates all the sparkle. And for me, the sparkle is what is exciting and what I love to look at, but I will let Wade do a more in-depth four C's review.
Okay, go right ahead, Wade.
All right, so yeah, the four C's are actually value factors that you can kind of set a value of a diamond relative to each other. And as Catherine mentioned, cut is one of the four C's. The other three of the four C's are color, clarity, and carat weight. So cut obviously relates to the manufacturing of the diamond. There's a lot of science and math and artistry that goes into the cutting of a diamond. Diamond cutters go through apprenticeships and work years and years and years to master the skill of the artisanship of diamond cutting. And that's what releases the beauty from the diamond crystal. That's where you get all that sparkle and fire. The facets that are put into diamonds during the cutting process act like windows and mirrors, so the light can go in and bounce around inside the diamond and come back to your eye, creating those brilliant flashes and sparkles and the colorful fire that you see in a diamond. The other three C's, color, clarity, and carat weight, are all sort of they're built into the crystal, let's say, and so they're not influenced by human artistry. The color is in colorless diamonds is the relative absence of color. So it's graded on a D to Z scale, with D being the highest grade with the lowest amount of color visible. And that goes all the way to Z, which borders on fancy yellow. You don't have to have a D color diamond to be enjoyable. A lot of people like a little bit of a warmer color to their diamond. And depending on the setting that you put the diamond in, it can appear to be have less color or more color. Clarity is the inclusions that are in the diamond. And you don't have to have a flawless diamond for it to be seen to not have any inclusions. You can have some inclusions in that diamond, but you have to realize that those inclusions are very, very tiny, so they may not be visible to the eye. And, of course, carat weight is how much the diamond weighs. With all of the other factors equal, the carat weight will make a difference on the value just because there's more diamonds there.
Okay. We do have a caller from Green Bay. Carol, go ahead with your question.
Okay. I've been collecting vintage and antique jewelry and collectible jewelry for a long time, and now I want to get rid of it. What's a good place to sell just beautiful jewelry?
Catherine, you want to take that? Go ahead.
Sure. We would recommend having it appraised, because that, if you're using, whether you're using a local jeweler who might purchase estate jewelry or one of the online purveyors of estate or antique pieces, they usually require as much documentation as you have and most likely an appraisal. Also taking good photos so that when you share those online that people can see what they look at. But also it's wonderful to take vintage pieces. And a lot of jewelers have bench jewelers on their staff, and they can turn those vintage pieces into pieces that you may wear or you may pass on to a family member, too. So there's all kinds of ways to enjoy that collection, but definitely seeking a professional appraiser would be a great first step.
Okay. Thanks, Carol. Appreciate that call. So going back to diamonds, you know, it's we've been hearing a lot lately about natural diamonds versus lab diamonds. From a consumer perspective, what's the difference there?
All right. So I can take this one.
Mm-hmm.
The difference for the consumer is probably going to be most seen in the price. That's what you see first. Which the price for an equal size of a laboratory-grown diamond is probably going to be less than a natural diamond. And the reason for that is because of the supply. There is not a limited supply of laboratory-grown diamonds. Laboratory-grown diamonds are manufactured, so they can be manufactured to specific details. They could be manufactured in large numbers. So there's not as much of a rarity factor there. So you will see that in the price. So it really depends on what the consumer wants, what the customer is looking for. And what we really encourage is that they seek out the information behind what they're purchasing. It's very important that laboratory-grown diamonds are disclosed. And it's very true that the transaction and the conversation in the sales is very transparent. So shopping with a trusted jeweler like an American Gem Society jeweler is very important for that, just so they understand what they're purchasing.
How can you tell the difference between a lab diamond and a natural one?
So having some experience in the lab where we were grading both laboratory-grown diamonds and natural diamonds, it's very difficult to tell the difference without some testing. There are some telltale inclusions and clarity characteristics that might be able to tip somebody off that it's a laboratory-grown diamond. But because any laboratory-grown gemstone has the same optical, physical, and chemical properties of its natural counterpart, it's very difficult. There are advanced testing techniques, and there are some very important markers that you see in that advanced testing that actually reveal that it is laboratory-grown. There are diamond screeners that are available to jewelers and for retailers and suppliers. They can actually screen diamonds to get an initial impression whether it's laboratory grown or natural. And those are very important in that transparency that I was just speaking about.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So,
and that's why it's so important to shop with a trusted jeweler, because you want to make sure that person has the gemological experience and has the proper equipment to do that testing.
Okay. So let's talk about the settings of jewelry. Now, there's all kinds of different metals that are used. What are some of the more common ones, and what are some of the newer ones, Catherine?
So metals is a fun area because it provides you that opportunity to coordinate the stone and the metal, but it's most important to know how and where you're going to have that piece of jewelry. So if you know that you're a very active person who's always using their hands, you want to seek a harder metal, something like a platinum, to make sure that setting is very, very strong. But not to mention, you want to make sure if you use your hands a bunch, that you might look for a setting that sets the stone closer to your hand versus a higher setting that could get knocked around. So it's important to know how you want to wear and use the jewelry. But there's all kinds of different metals and metal mixes, and even meteorite and some things like that are in metal. But most importantly, know how you're going to use that piece, and then work with your jewelry professional to match your needs and metal type.
Wade, I understand that you wrote some coursework on bench jewelry. First, what is bench jewelry?
So a bench jeweler is the manufacturer or repair person that either works in a retail store or a retail store can outsource for repairs to a company that has bench jewelers. Basically, the term bench jeweler comes from the fact that they work at a bench and they have all the tools available for them there to do any manufacturing work. A bench jeweler can be integral in the design process and the manufacturing, or help out with repair for jewelry. The coursework that we've been working on at American Gem Society has actually been for the bench jeweler and the salesperson to be able to communicate more effectively, so that the repairs that are needed or the manufacturing that needs to be done requested by the customer is well communicated. We're actually working towards additional levels of this education for the bench jeweler as well. But the bench jewelers are very important in the industry because they are the ones who are going to be handling all of those repairs and actually manufacturing some of the custom design situations.
How can you tell if the piece of jewelry that you're buying is made well? I think we've all had problems with, losing a stone or, a chain breaking. What are some good ways to find to know that what you're buying is really well constructed?
So once again, I know we've said it quite a few times on this show, on this program so far, but you want to go to a trusted jeweler. There are some quality checks that can be done when a piece of jewelry is repaired or when they're accepting their inventory to be sold. That should be done to make sure that all of the quality is in place, and also make sure that you ask those questions of the jeweler because the jeweler should be vetting their suppliers as well to make sure that the quality pieces are coming to them. But there again, it comes back to that. Make sure you're shopping with a trusted jeweler.
And how often should you bring a piece in to have it checked, you know, for a loose stone or anything like that?
So the recommendation is about once every 6 months. That way they can check to make sure that the prongs are in the right place, that the stone is not damaged or loose. If a stone does become loose, it has a greater risk of being damaged, and you could have a greater repair cost on your hand later. So just having it checked once every 6 months is good. They can also check if there's any metal plating, like with white gold. It's usually plated in rhodium. They can see if there's any wear on that and recommend a little bit of rhodium plating to bring it back to that mirror finish. But I would recommend probably once every 6 months. If not once every 6 months, at least once a year.
Once a year. Okay, because I had heard that before. But if you got something that's, you know, worth that much money, you want to take care of it for sure. And speaking of that, Catherine, how does the value of our jewelry stand up to time? Is it a good investment?
You know, I think a lot of people ask this question, and I think a piece of jewelry should capture a cherished moment. And first and foremost, it is meant to be something that you wear and that you enjoy, and that when you open your jewelry box, you remember those special moments when you were given it. And it's like a memory box and how it makes you feel. But the diamond market and gemstone market has, the value has grown over time, especially natural and rare gemstones. But I, and while you hear a lot of people buying gold bars and investing with any kind of investment, it is dictated by the market. And so I support the appreciation and buying jewelry because you love it. But yes, natural gemstones and diamonds their value has grown over time.
So Wade, if someone's going out to say to buy a piece of jewelry for a loved one, what advice do you have for picking out that piece of jewelry?
Probably first and foremost is understanding who you're buying it for and what they like. I think that's very important. If you have that knowledge, then you can kind of gear your decision towards what they're going to love, because ultimately they're going to be wearing this piece of jewelry hopefully for a very long time, and you're going to want to make sure they love it. Otherwise, I would just look for something that matches that person's personality. I mentioned earlier colored gemstones may be an option other than diamonds. If they really love diamonds, then go for that. And then also make sure that you know what you are looking for as far as the price point. You want to be sure that you have that knowledge and that understanding first. Do a little bit of research, but, you know, sometimes research is a little bit, you can do too much research is what I'm trying to say. Like I said, make sure you get to that trusted jeweler. You can find a list of jewelers at AmericanGemSociety.org, and we have a Find a Jeweler search tool that you can find a jeweler.
And if you got somebody looking for something that's just kind of unusual and maybe it hasn't even crossed their mind, do you have maybe a gem to suggest?
There's so many gems out there, Tanzanite is a very beautiful bluish purple colored gem, so that's absolutely fantastic, and pairs well with diamonds. Opal, which was mentioned earlier on the program, goes with everything because it has all colors of the rainbow. It is not quite as durable, so you want to make sure that you understand that. But those are a couple that are very nice.
Okay, Catherine, any last words?
No, I just. We're so excited that we got to talk about jewelry. I think it is the absolute perfect Valentine's Day gift because it lasts forever. I know that when I have received jewelry as gifts, I continue to wear it and hopefully give it to my daughter someday versus that handbag that, you know, I destroy and have to retire. So give the gift of jewelry because your loved ones will cherish it for a very long time.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Catherine Bodo is the CEO of the American Gem Society, and Wade Abel is the director of gemology there. Up next, we're going to talk to a florist about her job, and she's going to have some advice on, you know, keeping those cut flowers fresh. So if you've got a question about flowers, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can always send an email, and that's talk@wpr.org.
It's then that those louses go back to their spouses. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.